validating and invalidating responses. In the first example above, Partner 2's responses are inappropriate because they derail Partner 1's legitimate emotions. Partner 2 doesn't want to spend time focusing on Partner 1 for whatever reason. They just don't want to deal with them. So Partner 2's ill-mannered, terse, and mean reaction makes a bad situation worse. But not all such responses are meant in a bad way. One can also, unsuspectingly, invalidate someone's feelings with good intentions. Some of the more innocuous responses we give to someone's emotional tumult can actually hurt them without us realizing what's going on. This is most likely what most of us are doing when we think we're validating. In fact, we're making the situation worse. For example, when consoling someone over a situation that makes them nervous or apprehensive, one might say something like, "Don't worry about it," or "You shouldn't feel that way." And they might say it in a comforting tone to make them feel better. They mean well, but such responses are actually invalidating. They are worried about their situation. They already feel that way. Telling someone they're not acting in the optimal way negates their entitlement to their own feelings. If you're making that remark out of kindness, your partner may receive it as invalidation of their perfectly normal feelings. It's simply unhelpful to hear, similar to telling someone, "Hey, just grow taller." An alternative response that successfully validates the other partner might be, "I can sense that you're worried about this situation." This response assures the partner that their concerns are real and that their presence is rightful. Remember, your goal is to identify emotions and then justify them, nothing more. Another invalidating and unhelpful response is, "I'm sorry you feel that way." You might think the phrase, "I'm sorry," is a form of empathy, and in a way, it can be, but it can also be interpreted as an empty sentiment. If someone's lost their job, been evicted, come down with a debilitating disease, or suffered some other awful injury or fate, "I'm sorry" doesn't quite cut it. By saying you're sorry someone is undergoing emotional turmoil, that they feel that way, you're also suggesting that there's a way they should feel, but they're not. Whether they should feel a certain way is irrelevant because they do feel that way. A more validating option would be, "I can understand why you're feeling this way. I think anyone else would too." Explaining that they have a right to be uneasy and that such feelings are normal help relax their tension and produce a bond with the rest of the world. They wouldn't be alone in feeling this way. Even if you think you wouldn't feel the exact way they feel, it's important to establish that others would. Besides, you might not really know if you wouldn't feel that way anyway. It probably hasn't happened to you yet. Likewise, responses like, "At least it's not like," or "It could be worse," imply that your partner's concerns are illogical or unfounded. Emotions are never logical, but they are real. Maybe the issue can be worse, but not right in someone's subjective sense of reality. Objective comparisons to more dire situations serve to put the worrier in their place, even if they're meant to make the partner feel less bad in the short term. But they're just friendlier forms of marginalization. The judgment as to whether someone's situation can or can't be worse belongs to the person who's feeling the emotions. In this situation, a proper validating response would make the listener feel that they're being taken seriously. "You've really been through a lot," or "Tell me more about what you're feeling." These responses acknowledge the weight of the other person's issues, reassuring them that you're willing to take their worries seriously and don't want to minimize how bad they feel. Outright rejections are not just invalidations, but straight-up reproaches. "I'm not having this discussion." This is invalidating because it directly cuts off communication and even further says that the other person's concerns are unworthy. By saying this, the respondent imposes a limit on communications. Obviously, there are some subjects that they're unwilling to discuss with you, when a true friend or partner wouldn't have any hands-off topics whatsoever. A better response is, "Would you like some help working through this problem?" Or, again, "Tell me more about what you're feeling." This helps the partner feel like they have, if not a total solution, then at least an open path to finding a better result. If it sounds like I'm suggesting you walk on eggshells when dealing with other people's feelings, and one of these responses slips out, don't. You'll make one of those responses again when you're done with this book. So will I, to be honest, because you and I both mean well. But be aware that those responses are invalidations that should be followed up as quickly as possible with validating statements. Remember, you're trying to form a connection and make communication flow freely. That will make the pivot easier to make. Hello, listeners. This is Russell with Newton Media Group, and I want to thank you for the time you've spent listening to the Social Skills Coaching Podcast. It's been a pleasure presenting Patrick King's material, and I hope you found it useful. I want to let you know that we're producing another podcast for you to check out, The Art and Science of Self-Growth, written by Peter Hollins and produced by Newton Media Group. We'll have some bonus material in the next few episodes from that new podcast, and hope you'll find it informative and helpful. Check out the show notes for the anchor.fm link, or search your podcast provider for The Art and Science of Self-Growth by Peter Hollins. Before we get to that bonus audio, let me ask you a question. How often do you experience low energy or fatigue, erectile dysfunction, low sex drive, anxiety, brain fog, or even just have a hard time making decisions? These are all symptoms of a hormonal imbalance, and here's a stat for you. 1 in 4 men over 30 have hormonal imbalances and are low in testosterone. This condition is often misdiagnosed. I'd like to introduce you to our sponsor, Let's Get Checked, a company with a mission to make professional health testing easily accessible. Their fast, affordable, and confidential at-home male hormone test kits help you take a measured approach to your health and measure your hormone levels from the comfort of your home. Even better, Let's Get Checked customers can get 20% off by using this URL, trylgc.com/NMG. That's N as in Newton, M as in media, G as in group. It's really easy. Here's how it works. Go to trylgc.com/NMG. Choose your test online and it'll be delivered to you in discreet packaging with next day delivery. Activate your test online and collect your sample one morning. Return the sample using the prepaid shipping label provided. Once your sample arrives in the lab, results will be available from your online account within 2 to 5 days. You'll get results on 5 hormonal levels: testosterone, sex hormone binding globulin, prolactin, estrogen, and your free androgen index, all without ever having to go to a doctor's office or a laboratory. I've recently experienced my own kind of brain fog and low energy. I was very interested in my hormone levels, and I can't think of a better way than was offered with Let's Get Checked. Everything needed was in the kit with step-by-step instructions. It only took 10 or 15 minutes for the whole process. This testing isn't just for men who think they're in a funk. All men should be testing their hormone levels on a regular basis. Let's Get Checked labs are CLIA approved, and all data is completely anonymized. Get 20% off at trylgc.com/NMG. That's trylgc.com/NMG. N as in Newton, M as in media, G as in group. Now, back to the episode and that bonus material from the new podcast, The Art and Science of Self-Growth by Peter Hollins.
Energy rules everything. Money is important. Time is important. But these are not the quantities that will limit you in your life. Without energy, neither of these factors means very much. Nothing really does. Think about it. You could have a huge bank account, but it won't matter one bit if you're confined to your bed with glandular fever and unable to stand up straight, let alone spend and enjoy that money. You could be young, bright, and full of promise, but if you're depressed and lethargic 100% of the time, all that youth and potential means nothing. Without energy and the capacity for action and execution, all of your best intentions won't matter a lick. This is a book about the psychological and physiological bases of energy, where it comes from, how we can maintain it, and how to get more of it. You can think of energy as the most primordial, fundamental kind of wealth. Energy, whether it's psychological or physical, is like your personal fund of life itself. It's the well that you draw all your motivation, enthusiasm, and passion from. It's what makes one person's life a boring slog, while another person, doing much the same thing, appears to be living with zest and purpose. It all comes down to energy. There's a great big world out there, and if we're to explore it, we need the physical and emotional strength to get out there and engage with it. Opportunities abound all around us, but if we're too depleted and uninspired to grab them when they do, it doesn't matter how fortunate we are or how many lucky breaks come our way. It's a little like having the world at your feet and a map of the world's awesome highways and roads in front of you, but not having any fuel in your car. Without energy, life becomes two-dimensional and gray. You may even feel like life is just whizzing past you and you're left behind because you can't keep up. When we have energy, the world is ours. We have the spirit and the wherewithal to grasp it. We can reach out and engage with others, with our environment, with ourselves, and with our dreams. We have what's needed to build our ideal world, one brick at a time, and we have the resilience and spring in our step to appreciate what we already have. Energy is fuel. It powers everything great in life, whether that's creativity, productive work, innovative solutions to life's problems, personal development, rich relationships with others, or simply the joy of having a strong body, a clear mind, and robust emotional health. The great thing about energy is that, in some ways, it can feed on and encourage itself. When you're energized, you act decisively and with conscious intention. You turn down distractions or temptations. You're able to push yourself a little and grow because of the challenge. And when you grow, you're inspired to keep going, setting up today the conditions that will most benefit you tomorrow. Acting with energy has a cumulative effect, bolstering you against life's trials and difficulties, and making celebrations and triumphs all the more wonderful. Unfortunately, the opposite is also true. Low energy creates more apathy, more tiredness, more of that listless blah feeling that only seems harder and harder to budge the longer it lingers. When you're low on energy, you're more likely to take the easy way out, give up on your dreams because they're too challenging, or put up with negative behavior in yourself and others that you might not have otherwise. The result is a steady stream of self-reinforcing behaviors that create a compromised life that just feels bad, plain and simple. This is why it's so important to focus on energy. It doesn't matter how many other great things you have going on in your life. If you don't have the energy to engage with them properly, to appreciate them, to bring them to life, it's the same as not having those great things at all. In a way, we can think of this as multiplying by zero, a mathematical mental model that preaches the importance of shoring up your weaknesses. In mathematics, it doesn't matter what else is going on in an equation or expression. If you're multiplying by a zero anywhere, the end result is always the same, zero. You might think you're on to the next big mathematics discovery, like Pythagoras or Descartes, but if a zero slips in there without your noticing, you're just going to end up with a fail for the day. No amount of finagling or negotiating will impact your result. And so lack of energy is like the big fat zero that cancels out all your other efforts and intentions, no matter how grand and noble they may be. In fact, you can do your best to keep on increasing the other variables as much as you wanted. For our purposes, well-wishing, hoping, dreaming, good intentions, and self-flagellation. But it wouldn't matter. Even infinity multiplied by zero is still zero. A chain, as they say, is only as strong as its weakest link. Even if all the links in your life are looking pretty good, they can't do much about that one wobbly link, that zero that can break and undermine the strength of the entire chain. In this book, we're going to first examine ways to make sure your energy quotient is a non-zero, and in fact, is always one of the most powerful variables at your disposal. Soon after, we'll focus on optimizing the rest of the equation, learning to beat procrastination, creating better goals, and manipulating our psychology to be more effective and efficient. Often, you'll find that increased energy is the true cure to what ails you because it allows you to have willpower, dig deep, and reach goals. That's the real secret behind traits like self-discipline and resilience. Let's consider a real-life example. Since you can remember, you've wanted to write that special novel about cats and murder on the Hawaiian island of Oahu. You have so many big ideas, a real message you want to share with the world, but somehow, it never comes together. You wake up in the morning and promise yourself you're going to find time to sit and write today. You can barely sit still because of your anticipation over plotting, character development, and the invention of a new fantastical language. For the cats, obviously. But then, after a hard day's work, after your commute home, after housework, and just, well, life, you're exhausted. Suddenly, you don't feel quite so inspired. You put off your great novel dream until tomorrow. Tomorrow becomes next week and then next month. And so it goes. Let's run through a list of common recommendations for someone in your current position of struggling to write a novel. You could try and take other people's advice on how to write your book. You could read about making better plans and outlines, or join a writing group, or even hire a writing coach to help you out of your writer's block. These recommendations try to improve or optimize other variables in the equation, but they don't address the real problem. You don't have writer's block, and you don't need a coach. You've just run out of energy, and you're trying to multiply by zero. And again, when your energy's at zero, none of that other stuff matters. So long as that's the case, you're going to keep coming up short when it comes to things that you really care about. When you zoom out and take a bird's eye view, you can see so much of what's out there in the personal development realm as merely the hopeless attempt at increasing numbers in the rest of the equation without doing a thing to increase that big fat zero that will cancel it all out. You could waste unbelievable amounts of time trying to understand the psychological, cognitive, institutional, behavioral, or maybe even spiritual dimensions to why you can't achieve the things you've already identified as important. But there's a pretty simple explanation that will help you understand all of this without resorting to all these theories. You're tired. You simply ran out of energy. Your gas meter is out. Your battery needs recharging. After all, at the end of the day, we are all biological beings. We're all organisms that need energy to work, to move, to communicate, to live. If that aspect isn't working well, all the rest is utterly irrelevant. So, it's no use talking about motivation or passion or inspiration or even deeper things like life purpose and vision if you're exhausted and have already burnt all your life fuel for the day. With this in mind, let's turn our focus from the rest of the equation and learn more about the one element that is quietly undoing all your effort, that tiny zero that nevertheless has a big impact. We can break down energy, psychological and physiological, into four general categories, and this is well represented by the concept of the energy pyramid as put forth by Tony Schwartz. This has been Endless Energy, a blueprint for productivity, focus, and self-discipline for the perpetually tired and lazy. Written by Peter Hollins, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2019 by Peter Hollins. Production copyright by Peter Hollins.